It is Monday, December 30th, 2013, and this is episode 48 of the Defensive Security Podcast, and my name is Jerry Bell, and joining me tonight, as always, is Mr. Andrew Callett.
Good evening, and happy birthday, Jerry. I noticed your new walker that you hobbled to the mic with is very nice.
Thank you.
No, but seriously, happy birthday. It sucks having a birthday near Christmas. I personally do not, but I have a lot of friends and family who do, and I feel your pain.
Yeah, it's, I've been doing it for a long time now, so.
Do you insist on separate gifts for Christmas and your birthday, or?
Demanded, yes, absolutely.
Yes, I understand.
I'm a very demanding person, just ask my wife.
Yes. Wow. I have no idea where the show just started.
Yes. But anyhow.
Anyway, hey, it's almost New Year's, too. So.
It is almost New Year's. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's.
And unlike every other podcast, we're not doing a look back show at all.
No, absolutely not. Because, you know, what's worth looking back at, right?
It's true. Though, I think, and I'm popping this on you, like with no warning, I think we should give one or two predictions for 2014 and we can then review how we did.
I think that's a great idea.
So.
Absolutely.
Now I have to think of some.
Well, you got some time.
All right.
Anyway. All right. So let's jump into some stories. So we missed last week because of Christmas. I was, I was off and just thoroughly lazy and sick and whatnot. So, but I did get to talk to Bob for a little bit, and he gave me one small piece of advice.
Bob never rests.
He doesn't, and that is. To use different passwords on all the servers that you manage.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think you can kind of imagine what might have led to that little bit of knowledge. But anyhow, it's good advice.
Isn't it? I'll tell you, a password manager changed my life.
Absolutely.
And in corporate worlds, you could have all sorts of cool systems where you can, check out short-term root passwords or sysadmin passwords. And, I mean, they're kind of a pain to set up, but once you get them set up, they're pretty damn handy.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that so many people, including a lot of, a lot of people in security and, just general IT administration fight it,
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're lazy.
It's inconvenient. It's difficult,
We think we know better.
Absolutely.
And it will indeed bite us. So
anyhow, there is quite a lot that's happened since we had our last show. And one of the really big pieces of news was, of course, Target. And I think unless everybody's been living under a rock, it's probably pretty clear what's been going on with Target. But I don't think we still yet understand how the 40 million credit card numbers came to be compromised. Although that has not in any way, shape, or form stopped lots of people from hypothesizing about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it was Krebs who broke it, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Or Krebs, sorry.
Krebs.
Krebs. Krebs. Krabs. Krebs. One of those. I have a feeling that Target was not yet ready for it to go public. And they were working on their disclosure PR campaign, and this got out in front of them. But since then, who knows, man? I mean, there's so much conjecture out there. There's so much stuff floating around. It's tough to know what's real and what isn't right now. Especially when we start talking about pins and whether or not the pins were captured and whether they're encrypted and how they're encrypted. And
yeah, absolutely. I think I've heard every permutation of every possibility, portrayed as truth by someone. It was absolutely the point of sale terminals. There's no other option. And other people will say, There's no way it could have been point of sale terminals. It had to be the back end, you know, and everything in between. So I think we're going to have to see how it plays out. And hopefully at some point we do understand what happened, but I suspect that's probably pretty unlikely.
Well, I think there's likely to be some lawsuits. And, you know, if they're probably not wanting to disclose more than they have to because they're anticipating pending some sort of litigation. And, you know, rightly or wrongly.
Well, certainly, I think there's already been several suits filed.
Well, of course. But, you know, a lot of those are just spun up immediately because somebody can.
Yeah. But I suspect a lot of those will be settled.
You know. Yeah. It'll be interesting. So I guess the point is take a lot of us with a grain of salt right now. We don't really know. But I'm also hearing some folks who say they do know things that, you know, have interesting things to say. So I don't know. I don't know. But it is a big one.
It definitely is.
There's probably a lot of lessons we can learn from it. Not much I could point out at the moment because we don't know a ton yet. But I think one of the most interesting ones is this went on for at least a month, roughly.
Yeah, I think it was
5 weeks, something like that.
Yeah, it was a couple of weeks. I'm not exactly sure. There was a little bit of uncertainty there around the time frame, but I think it started around Black Friday and went through the second week of December.
Yeah. So to me, if that malware or whatever was active for that period of time, you know, it'd be interesting to know what finally caught it, how they finally found out, and what sort of mechanisms, if any, they had in place to monitor for this sort of thing. But, you know, who knows? It's without knowing if this was an active, you know, botnet sort of communication or an exfiltration of data through some sort of means. Who knows, right? We just don't know enough to draw too many conclusions.
Well, I think we can look at a couple of things that are factual. Number one is that Target kind of got flat-footed, as you pointed out, by Brian Krebs and his report, right? And
yeah.
I think if you look at what a lot of people are most unhappy about, it's the way that they found out about this.
Yeah, although I'm going to say this once and I'm going to get off the soapbox. It's not our liability. It's a pain in the ass. But if somebody pops your credit card or your debit card, at the end of the day, you get the money back. It's not our liability when credit cards and debit cards get popped. It's not that it's not a pain in the ass. Don't get me wrong. But it's not as bad as, say, all of your personal identifiable information just got popped.
No, that's a good point. And that was something that I wanted to point out is that I don't think Target really, you know, maybe it's that they were caught up in the moment or what have you. I'm not really sure, but you know, one of the responses they took was to offer credit monitoring.
Right.
And you know,
well, that's the default. That is the default response now when there's any sort of identity theft or, you know, financial breach. Here's some credit monitoring from Bob's Credit Monitoring and Budget Bait Shop.
Just left a lot of us kind of scratching our heads. You know, what good is that going to do?
Well, you know, it was very reminiscent of the TJX, you know, hack, although that one is even more notoriously silly. And a lot of people said, oh, TJ Maxx is going out of business. Oh, they're doomed. They're, you know, the market's going to punish them. You know what? Nothing really happened. And as sad as it sounds, I don't think much is really going to happen with Target either. They're probably going to pay some big-ass fines, probably have some lawsuits for a while. But I doubt, you know, the suburban mom in her minivan is going to stop shopping there over this.
No, no. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are making a lot of noise about it, and I don't know if they're, you know, Walmart employees or what.
But, well, you know, there's folks in our industry, of course, right? And it's sexy news. It's, you know, it's stuff that the average public can get their hands around and understand it. And it's that mythical black box computer hacker thing. So I don't know.
Yep.
Wow, now, I'm just full of New Year's cheer tonight. I'm
absolutely.
Sorry.
Absolutely. The other thing I thought that was interesting was, you know, Target came right out of the gate saying that they had already fixed the problem, All right. Because I think it was about 2 days after the last day of the window when the story broke, if I recall right. And their response was that they had found the problem and fixed it. So, you know, clearly, you know, given whatever it was, they were able to identify it and fix it. But I guess, as I understand it, they or according to their press releases, they're continuing to investigate how it happened.
I guess if we believe them, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would be unfortunate if, you know, it came out that they hadn't fixed it.
Yeah. So, to be continued, I guess, yeah. Right?
So the one thing I wanted to, I did want to point out in here is, in particular, among a lot of the security technorati recently was the topic of pins. And this goes kind of to the whole debate of, you know, should you have this information at all? And I'm going to negate the possibility that this was, you know, something that happened real time, right? Rather than being siphoned off the back end, right? Again, if you don't need the data, don't store the data, right? So we don't know in this case whether...
Sure,
or
tokenize it.
Or tokenize it, right. Yeah. We don't know how this came to be, but that I'm going to put that to the side for a second, because the debate that's happening right now is that Target came forward and said that it wasn't just the card numbers and, you know, the track one data that was stolen. It was also encrypted pins of debit cards. And, you know, Target in their press release has publicly said that, you know, the data wasn't, or those pins were encrypted, and the attackers don't have the encryption key, and therefore they can't recover the pins, and, you know, there's nothing to see here, move along. And this has really started quite a, you know, a kerfuffle on the internet. And, you know, a lot of back and forth, particularly some of the details about how Target stores their pins. Apparently they use TripleDes, and, you know, TripleDes is a very old thing. And so you've got a lot of us, you know, old school curmudgeonly security guys saying, hey, I remember when we broke TripleDes back in the 90s, you know, with distributed.net and, you know, and that sort of stuff. And so I think there's a lot of knee-jerk commentary going on right now about, you know, how horrible of an idea this was. And TripleDes is just really weak and easy to break. But, you know, if you read or pay attention to somebody who knows what they're talking about, like this article in the show notes by Matthew Green, who is a cryptographer with the Johns Hopkins University. And this is the same Matthew Green who got into the whole big brouhaha a couple of months back with, you know, when he made some commentary about the NSA and his university made him take down his blog post because there was a tie with the NSA and blah, 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 right? So anyway, this guy knows his stuff. He basically says, you know, for the purpose of encrypting pins, assuming they were complying with the guidelines set by PCI, there probably isn't a lot to worry about unless there's some other attribute of this breach that we don't know about. Like they actually got the key, right? So, you know, I think that's just something to keep in mind. And also, I think as defenders, we should keep this kind of thing in the back of our mind as we're designing our systems, right? So if somebody breaks this component of my environment, you know, they can get X, Y, and Z, but they still need A, B, and C. And if I can keep those, you know, distinct and separate, you know, that I can mitigate the damage.
Yeah, plan for a fail and limit the damage. Absolutely.
So anyway, moving on. Next story. This is a cool little thing, and it's it's kind of timely with some of the NSA stuff that's going on. And also in the context of bad BIOS, right? I thought this was really, really interesting. So there's a, there's an article on spritesmods.com, and I've got the link in the show notes. And it's this guy, and I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. But basically, he set a challenge for himself to go and hack a hard drive, right? Not like, you know, the normal hard drive hacking. He basically understood that there was a microprocessor on the controller card on the hard drive, and he basically wanted to own it. And through quite a lot of effort, he come to find out that there's a, at least on this Western Digital drive he was looking at, there's a 3-core processor on there. One of the cores wasn't really used very much, and he installed Linux on it. You basically has come up with a proof of concept way to flash a bootloader, or basically reflash the EEPROM and load his own operating system. And he hypothesizes, given what he was able to do, that you could do some really crazy stuff with hard drives. Like you could, you know, do the often hypothesized thing of creating a drive that's forever infected, right? So you wipe it, you re-image the drive with a new operating system, and bam, it's reinfected because the infection is inside the firmware of the drive. And the other one he proposed, which I thought was really cool, was basically watching the kinds of accesses to the drive. And so you would theoretically be able to tell if someone's taking an image of your drive. And if you detect someone taking an image of the drive, you could actually destroy the drive. Otherwise, it would work fine, right?
I love it.
It's brilliant. And this kind of adds a whole new depth to the kinds of things that we have to think about. And I thought it was really particularly interesting in the context of the bad BIOS thing that we've been talking about for a couple of months now.
And the news that just came out yesterday that theoretically, supposedly, the NSA is interrupting shipments of hardware and implanting malware into the hardware as it's being shipped from the OEM to the end customer.
Including the BIOS of computers and the hard drive controllers.
Right. So what this tells me is really we should just ban Linux because it's just too dangerous.
We can't handle the power.
Right. Save your hate mail. I'm joking.
Oh, boy. So anyway, this is a really cool article, especially if you're into hardware hacking. I mean,
yeah, it's pretty neat.
Obviously, it's kind of a scary thing, but man, is it cool. This is it's a really neat thing.
And in terms of defending against this, I got nothing. You know, I build your own hard drives. That's all I can tell you. You're doomed.
Yeah. Now, since I put together the show notes, I was kind of going through the talks at the Chaos Computer Club. They had their Congress this past weekend, and one of the talks was similar story, but with SD cards.
Nice.
And SD cards essentially have a microcontroller that is essentially about as powerful as one of those Arduinos.
No kidding.
Yeah, and so they didn't go nearly as deep into actually coming up with a proof of concept as this guy did on the Western Digital drive, but basically, you know, they're hypothesizing that, you know, you could do very similar kinds of things. You know, you could hide data, you could, you know, permanently infect something, you know, what have you. So I think the world of hardware hacking and hardware based malware is rapidly becoming a reality, whether we like it or not.
The key here, though, so far, at least with this particular thing, is that he needed physical access, right? I don't know that this could easily be turned into a remote exploit yet.
Well, at the end, I don't know if you read all the way through. He found a way eventually to reflash the EEPROM from the operating system.
Oh, I missed that. I did read through it, but I missed that particular one. Wow. Okay. Well, never mind.
Now, the one saving grace is that it is very, very, as I mean, it's been a very long time since I've hacked on hardware. I mean, like 80s.
That's what she said.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll tell you, it's probably going to be very drive dependent, right?
Sure. You're not going to
come up with some big.
But you know, hey, we only have 4 drive manufacturers left.
That's a good point.
You know, it's not that difficult to now, mind you, they're probably doing rapid iteration on the PCMs and whatnot of these drives. So it's, you know, you might have to write code that's dependent on a particular firmware flash of a particular drive model that, you know, may only have 3 months of production time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but minor issue, right? Especially if you're a nation state.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is going to really potentially, assuming this is all real and not, you know, not imagined, I think it's going to add an interesting dimension to the whole problem of IT security.
The only thing that I'll say is it goes back to, once again, just assuming your endpoints are popped.
Yes.
And never trust the endpoint.
Right.
Which is a really tough way of doing things, but I don't know what else to say. You know, there's so many ways to hide. What have we seen last year? Hide in graphic cards, hide in, you know, unused BIOS space, hide now in the, you know, the PCMs and the hard drives.
It's becoming a very difficult job of ensuring security. But I think the thing that concerns me most, and we're going to talk a little bit about the NSA next, is that, you know, it's not just the NSA that we have to worry about, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, you got to imagine that everybody from organized crime to anonymous to China to Russia to every other freaking country out there is taking all of this stuff and looking at it and saying, hey, you know, here's a great blueprint.
That's true. The only thing I can counter that is the bad guys are only as smart as they have to be, right? So especially if they are, you know, organized crime or whatnot, you know, they don't need to get this advanced and this sophisticated yet.
No, that's true.
Much lower, you know, what's the word I want to use here? Lower fidelity attacks are working. You know, lower tech attacks are working.
Yeah, yep. Funnycats.exe still works.
Yeah. So, but you know, it makes you wonder when do you stop nuking and paving a box and reformatting and reinstalling to literally nuking and paving it and replacing it. Now the upside is hardware is getting really, really cheap. And right. You know, but are we going to get to a point in certain corporate America and in critical security situations where we just discard the hardware when something happens?
You know, I know of several companies when executives in particular and some employees generally travel to different countries,
sure.
They will issue them, a burner laptop and they actually destroy the laptop upon return. I mean, it's not like re-image. They don't trust it at all. And I always thought that was a little excessive, to be honest. But now I can see some logic.
Well, you know, you're planning for worst case, right? And you're looking at the worst case scenario. Now, it may be extreme, but when the cost to do that is, you know, $300, $400.
Right. Right. It's not a huge cost.
No.
So, and the downside is potentially really high. So,
yeah.
So anyway, that takes us into, into the NSA and the longtime listeners will realize that I really don't like straying into politics, but I think it's hard to avoid given the stuff that's happened.
We're not straying
recently.
Into politics. They're straying into our territory.
That's a good way to look at it. Yes. So Der Spiegel and a number of other news sources have disclosed some new, oh boy, some new documents. And I think they had talked about this TAO, Tactical Access Operations, previously. And, you know, basically there are targeted access operations either way.
I've always heard it as tailored access operations.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, but, anyway, they're a group of primo hackers, right? Hardware, software hackers. And their job is to find a way in, you know, basically. And so what was disclosed new is apparently a catalog that government, particularly NSA operatives, could order from. And this catalog had lots of different items in it. And, you know, things like malware for the iPhone and USB shims or USB hard drives that had, you know, essentially transmitter or transceivers in the USB plug, right? So you could plug in, you could provide a target with this USB keyboard, and the keyboard would, you know, work as a keyboard, but it also had some electronics in the actual USB connector, including a USB hub and a RF transceiver and some other related electronics, so that, you know, they could not only do key logging and, you know, exfiltrating data out, you know, over RF. And by the way, you know, one of the things that was put out, which was really subtle, was the way they are exfiltrating data, you need to use radar type equipment to detect it. And the reason for that is so that the normal bug sniffers essentially are frequency counters. And, you know, I'm an old RF guy, and, you know, you can walk into a room and you pull out an RF counter and you can see if there's a, you know, if there's a bug in your room, and you can move it around and whatnot. But in this particular case, they were pulsing it, right? And it you know, clever bastards.
Yes.
So anyhow, as far as I can tell, right, they've kind of built these modular protocols, and all of their wares kind of interoperate with these different components. So they, you know, you can hook in your USB cord, or they have a video cable, right, that a monitor cable that will allow the, yeah, I guess I'll say the good guys.
wait, it's tough not to laugh, wait.
I know. Anyway.
Oh, we're going to prison.
Let the NSA watch the screens of the target, right? And, you know, and many other things, and including apparently abilities to remotely compromise different firewalls like Juniper and Cisco, apparently some hardware modules to compromise all sorts of different manufacturers' stuff, right? Including, apparently, in some cases, as you've already mentioned, right, intercepting shipments of systems, and they apparently have a team of people who will unbox and modify and repackage and ship out systems. And, you know, I know Cisco has expressed some pretty extreme displeasure about this. You know, given what happened with RSA, you know, I think we all have to wonder what the heck's going on and who's all involved. And, you know, but you kind of have to take them at their word that they're saying they, you know, that they're pretty unhappy about this, and they've launched an investigation to see, you know, the extent to which this is going on, and on and on. So, you know, this is pretty dangerous stuff from an IT perspective, because, you know, what happens if, you know, you find one of these things in your environment? What happens if somebody takes it over? You know, what, there's so many what ifs here, it makes my head spin.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, we used to always say for a long time that don't buy anything from China because they plant a bunch of backdoors in it. We're becoming much worse than China. We now are known to be doing this. And it's not just conjecture. It's not just maybe. It's, I don't even know yet how to adapt to this new world. It's just frightening. I mean, the only thing I can possibly say, the upside of this, is rather than something indiscriminate like cell phone monitoring, you have to get on the radar for them to take this trouble to come after you, which is something to be said. But nonetheless, it's still just so troubling. I mean, you go back and you look at the TAO catalog, it really read like, oh, okay, you've got a checkpoint firewall you need to get through? All right, we got 3 ODAs that can help you there. Just let us know. Okay, you got a Cisco router XYZ? All right, we got 2 ODAs for that. Just let us know. And, you know, so I guess in some ways it's good to go back to, you know, the old make sure that you're not broadcasting all your scary technology.
Oh, speaking of broadcasting security technology, did you happen to see, well, you know, we've known for a while that they use malware, right? And in the common way, right? They'll phish you or what have you, right? But they have a notoriously high success rate. And one of the reasons is they use their monitoring of Microsoft's network. To capture Dr. Watson and nice. Other error reporting systems. So, you know, if your application crashes and you report it to Microsoft and you're on their watch list, now they have lots of information about your system and they can tailor their ODAs to your system. So, you know, it's damn clever stuff, right? I can't imagine how much fun people had putting all this stuff together, right? This is
That's true.
This is if it weren't so draconian in 1984, right? This would be insanely cool.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what's going on in the boardrooms of some of these companies right now, too. You know, if they knew about this. And this was never supposed to leak. I'm sure they're livid. If they didn't know about this, I'm sure they're livid. You know, they're already talking about how much overseas sales they're losing as a result of all this stuff coming out with the NSA, which, you know, realistically might be the only policy stick that will actually change some of this. But it's tough. But yeah, you're right. This is pretty fun stuff. I mean, this is back, you know, back in the days of like sneakers, you know, 92 when that came out in the God box that could break in anything, right? You know, we used to think that was all epic until, you know, we found our own governments doing that against us.
Well.
Yay.
Well, that hurt.
Yay. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
anyway, yeah, all right, so it is pretty wild. And yeah, so back to Cisco's thing, right? Or, you know, they're like, hey, we don't know about this. This is crazy. We're deeply concerned, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, it will be really interesting. I kind of wish I could go to sleep and wake up in 10 years and, you know, right. figure out, you know, kind of do a retrospective on what the heck was going on. You know, did RSA actually sign a contract for $10 million to weaken, you know, the elliptic curve, that one elliptic curve algorithm, and then make it the default, you know, or did they not? You know, what was the truth there? And, you know, what was the involvement of some of these other tech companies? And, you know, I don't know. It's becoming incredibly difficult for anybody to believe anything. And I think that's, you know, I'm kind of split-minded on this, right? Because on the one hand, this isn't targeted against U.S. tech companies, right? There isn't anything particularly novel with respect to these NSA revelations about U.S. companies, right? Because, you know, we know that Huawei was also one of them and a number of other foreign companies, right? But I think the problem is that it's becoming really difficult to believe anything.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's really going to be taking this thing down the rat hole. And I really fear for the security industry, but also the security industry specifically, but the IT industry generally in the U.S. because of this. And, you know, unfortunately, you can't unring the bell, right? Yeah. The bell's been rung. It's out in the open now, and we're going to have to deal with it. It's really going to be very interesting to see how we get back on our feet, get back on the horse. I don't know what we're going to do. 2014 is going to be an interesting year. And by the way, there apparently is no sign of this letting up, right?
Oh, no.
There's apparently a whole crap load more.
Oh, boy.
So anyway, I think it's from a you know, somebody who's interested in freedom and you know, all that stuff, it's frustrating. But trying to think about this from the perspective of how do we react to this? What are the, you know, what should we do different given what we know now versus what we knew then? And I'll be honest, I don't know. I don't really know yet. I think, you know, we got to kind of noodle on it for a while.
I think Avesta had the right answer. You know, just go into construction.
Yes.
I think is...
Clearly.
Sorry, Office Space. What did office I say? Space. Office Day? Well, wow. Office Space. Sorry. Man, I must be getting old.
Yep.
Office Space.
It happens, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Some days you wake up and...
No, like, but
where am I? Where's my pants?
No, you're right. What do you do? And I don't know that I've got an answer either. I think right now it's wait and see.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move on. So the next story we've got, moving on from that happy stuff.
Yeah. Good times.
The BBC had a server hacked. And I've been concerned about this kind of thing for a while now. And this server was hacked, and the person who hacked it was trying to sell access to it on Christmas Day. And apparently it took the BBC about 3 days to take action once they were alerted to it.
Well, they're on holiday. It's Christmas.
Well, clearly. I mean, so I think there's some obvious, things here. And, you know, it was interesting. I thought that it was Alex Hold's company that found this. And he's the guy that works with Brian Krebs on a lot of his stuff. But to me, one of the things that says is if you're an enterprise, and this may not play well with the small and medium businesses, if you're an enterprise, it's probably a good idea to, in some way, shape, or form, have feelers out there looking for people who are selling access to your stuff.
Oh yeah.
You know, or what you know, discussing the latest compromise of one of your servers or whatever.
Well, we're seeing this more and more too, like watching sites that are selling stolen data as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, that's something good. Now the other thing is, don't wait, right? I mean,
right. Have an on-call plan. It sucks. We know.
Have a plan. And I see this over and over again, you know, and by the way, I have a server out on the internet, and it gets hacked on, or at least attempted to be hacked at probably 100 times a day at least. And I'm not talking like port scans. I'm talking like, you know, somebody trying to break in. And, sometimes I'll feel generous, and I'll let the owners of the NetBlocks know, or, you know, because a lot of times it's very clear that it's a compromised server attacking mine. And, most of the time you never hear back, or,
yeah,
you know,
care.
it's a long time later or what have you. If somebody tells you that your server is compromised, do something. You know, how basic can it be? This doesn't take antivirus or, you know, advanced stuff. This is somebody tells you your server is compromised. It's attacking me.
Who was it a couple weeks ago that was in denial for the first couple of days that they had a problem? Oh, we talked about
it. It was PHP.
Oh, that's right. Thank you. PHP, yes.
It was PHP.net. They're,
yeah,
they're
like, no, we're fine.
No,
no. No, we're not serving malware. What are you talking about?
We're not dead yet.
Not dead yet.
Oh, my. So, yes, that's my lesson for that story. And then the last thing we had is something that you had you had sent, and this is from Securosis. And I know you introduced me to Mike Rothman at B-Sides Atlanta, so that was pretty cool. This paper is from Securosis. It's about defending against denial-of-service attacks. And, you know, we've talked about this in the past. I thought this was really very cool because it's not just like, you know, kind of the skimming the surface of, you know, go hire an Akamai and you know, a DDoS mitigation service. I mean, they go through kind of the weeds on all of the different, you know, the different kinds of denial of services, from, you know, attacking the database server to, you know, exhausting different aspects of the application server to, you know, hash collisions to everything. And it's way too long for me to talk about. It's 23 pages, and you know, there's lots of different things in here. So if you're interested in defending your site against denial of service attacks, I think this is a really great paper for you to read. I'll leave it up to you to read.
Yeah, you know, the Securosis guys really do a great job. They publish a lot of really valuable stuff on their blog. I would encourage you to watch it.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. And some of their guys are on another podcast, so they're pretty good.
You know, shout out.
I mean,
you can't fault
them for. I mean,
hey, they're good guys. They do some great work, and they do this open research concept where whatever research they come up with, they try not to have it ever be influenced by any of the people who are, you know, kind of providing capital for it. But it's really good, just hardcore, in theory, non-biased info. So, well worth taking a look at.
Yeah, I will say, and I'll echo that, I've been really impressed by the things they put out. So definitely give them a read.
And Mike's a curmudgeon like us, so it's a positive.
Absolutely. Well, that takes us to the end of our scheduled agenda. I don't think I have anything else. You have anything?
We're going to do predictions for 2014.
Thank you. Predictions.
Yeah, you first.
I typically see two different kinds of predictions. Number one was, you know, predictions that align with their product. And the other was predictions that are so freaking obvious. Like, right. You know, there will be more Android malware next year. You know, and so I think that we will continue to see the industrialization of malware, right? I think we will see a continual evolution of kit-based malware. And, you know, one of the things that I see as a defender, and I'm starting to see this a lot, is it's becoming really difficult to separate, you know, what I'll call an advanced attack versus, like, you know, kind of run of the mill, right?
Yeah.
Because the techniques and the tools are becoming so available. It's, you know, you don't have to be a really highly advanced malware author now to come up with something that will evade sandbox detection and will resist analysis and will, you know, do all these, you know, I guess I'll call it fancy, you know, malware kinds of things, because these are all now available as kind of a prepackaged kit that you can kind of bolt on, and you know, you don't have to be a sophisticated attacker to launch a sophisticated attack anymore. And so, kids, you know, one thing I'd tell you is, you know, just because something looks complicated doesn't mean that you're being attacked by Russia, you know, or you're being attacked by the NSA. It, you know, some of the stuff it's garden variety, but it's getting really complicated. So I'd say that's one, you know, one big prediction. I'm going to punt on the other one. I don't know.
All right. That's fair.
How about you?
I think two things will occur. I think the security industry, from a vendor perspective, is going to jump all over the Snowden and NSA thing as a marketing gambit. Everybody and their brother is going to come out and say, this is how my technology would have stopped Snowden, or here's how you can cope with NSA. And I think that that is probably going to be half BS, but I think you're going to see that. I think more and more of the IT industry, or I should say the security industry, vendors are going to start shifting towards the detection and mitigation and containment of attacks in 2014.
Excellent prediction.
But there is a lot of momentum around prevention. Prevention is the vast majority of the juggernaut of IT vendors, security vendors. But I think that many companies are realizing prevention is not getting it done. And so I think that's going to pull these guys into detection, remediation, containment, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an outlier. I have little confidence. I don't have as much confidence this one, but I'm predicting in 2014 a BYOD backlash when employees are starting realizing, yes, you can bring your stuff to work, but the company's got a lot of control over that, and they don't like that.
Ooh, that's an interesting one.
So we'll see. We'll see.
I'm going to throw out another optimistic one. I know I had my chance, but it's my podcast.
No, it's all good.
I hope that the IT security industry will start to conclude that relying on behavior as a primary method of defending your systems is a non-starter. Getting people to realize that an email is not legitimate.
Wait, do you mean user behavior or behavior modeling of malware?
User behavior.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
That's okay. No, I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, what I'm saying is I think it's ridiculous.
User awareness training blows?
It's not that it...
Right. Somebody's always going to click on the shiny, right?
Yes. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, right? My first prediction is that these tactics are becoming much more refined. It is not, they're not badly worded phishing emails anymore. And, you know, these are very well crafted stuff. I don't know about you, but personally, I've gotten a whole crap load of really realistic looking Walmart and a few other retailer emails telling me that my package can't be delivered. And damn, it looks real.
Yeah. In fact, this entire podcast has been a long con that I've been pulling on you. So yeah, absolutely.
The other one that I got, which I thought was which was really interesting.
I've been playing that joke for a while now, and you just blew right past it. That's fine. Go on.
Sorry.
No. That's fine.
I'll edit in some shock. You know, I'll go back and pretend to be surprised.
Anyway, the other one you've gotten recently
is I got an email from the state of Washington's court system telling me that they had, you know, they there was a pending suit against me. Ooh. And the judge, you know, the judge was going to render a verdict if I don't, you know, if I don't take action. And, you know, there was an attachment. It was a zip file. And obviously nice. It was really well written. And, you know, obviously I'm nowhere near Washington State, never been there, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it occurred to me, and obviously I see this an unfortunate number of times, people falling for things, and we just can't rely on that. And I really hope that in 2014 we stop fooling ourselves, thinking that, you know, if we can just train them a little better, you know, that they'll realize that email from their manager isn't really from their manager. And you know what? It's just it's dumb. It's not going to happen. People, you know, when you're busy, you know, your defenses are going to be down. They're going to fall for it. I'm sorry. Just move on. Find something else.
This was your optimistic prediction?
Yes.
Wow.
Because I'm optimistic, people are going to
continue to suck.
No. people are going to realize that user awareness training is not the
fair enough.
Not again. I'm not taking the side that user awareness training is a bad thing, right? Because I think it is valuable. All I'm saying is it isn't adequate to protect your environment.
Sure. Have a technical backstop.
Yes, absolutely. So anyhow, that is the last episode for 2013.
Yay!
And now I get to go rest up. I have quite a party tomorrow, I hear.
It's true. It is New Year's.
It is New Year's.
Well, it's been a fun year. Thanks for having me on the show. I look forward to another good year of shows starting soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining me, coming along for the ride. This has been a lot of fun.
Indeed.
And we will talk to you again next week. Thanks a lot, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Bye.